Hi, I'm Jim Shooter, and you're listening to the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast.
Greetings, Cap fans, and welcome to another episode of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast. This is episode 137. I am your host, Rick Verbanis. And as always, I'm joined by, you know, as some people say, the best gosh darn co-host out there. Oh, Bob. We would be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be under the sea. Bob, take it.
I don't know what comes after you.
Oh, come on, Bob.
Is that from Little Mermaid or something?
No. I get Under the Sea. Yeah, I guess you could do
Finding Nemo?
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden with you.
No idea. And it frightens me, quite honestly. It frightens me a little bit because I'm not a big fan of water. So on being under the sea, that really doesn't bode well.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, know where we've been. Oh, come on. Bob.
No idea. I've never heard that song.
It's the Beatles.
Oh, that's why. You know I'm not a Beatles fan, Rick.
But,
I know you are. We've had this discussion.
Don't do that. Don't be like, I know you are. No, the world is Beatle fans, Bob.
You are
the anomaly here, not me.
Then I accept the award. So.
Yes, and it was one of those songs that John and Paul tossed Ringo a bone.
Right.
Ringo got to sing one song every other album or something like that, and this was a big hit for him. This was Ringo Starr.
That's fair.
Lead vocals.
He had the hot wife.
Oh, he did. Catherine Bach, actually.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. How you doing?
So
a little caveman, right? So, remember that movie?
A little professional. Oh, I do remember that movie.
Yeah. Anyway, Octopus's Garden is the name of the song.
Okay.
And it came out in 1969.
It's about drugs? Sounds like it's about drugs.
No, this is not Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Okay.
This is Octopus's Garden. Yeah. It's a silly song. It's a silly. A lot of kids, children liked this song.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so why am I singing about Octopus's Garden, Bob?
Well, now it makes sense.
Does it?
Makes sense.
Yeah. There's a little light bulb went off?
A little bit this time, sir. Yeah. So obviously because we're going to read a story that has Doc Ock in it.
Exactly, Bob. And what issue number is that?
That would be issue 259, Rick.
Oh, very good, Bob.
Yes.
I love how you look things up.
Can I have a cookie?
Yes, we're covering today Captain America 259, which came out in 1981. And it does. It's a one issue story, and it does star Captain America going up against a villain that he hardly never goes up against because it's a Spider-Man villain, Doc Ock. So I thought my hello to you today should mention Octopus. But I also thought, Bob, there's several lyrics in this song, but the part that I sang to you was, we would be so happy, you and me, no one there to tell us what to do. And I thought that tied in with the story, Bob.
Interesting.
Right?
Interesting. Yeah.
Right? A prodigal son doesn't like
onion.
You're
an onion.
I make people
layers.
Cry. You're right.
Yeah. Right. Nice.
But there's a prodigal son that doesn't like to be told what to do. That's why we're a little late recording tonight, Bob. It took me a long time to peel that onion and figure that out.
I know. I looked at like the top 120 songs of 1981.
Yeah.
You know, but then I got distracted because, you know, a lot of those songs were from Sheena Easton and I had a huge crush on Sheena Easton.
Oh, who didn't?
One, right? So
oh, had, who didn't?
I actually have her on my gym playlist. Right? Is
it, yeah. Yes. You want to check out her sugar walls, Bob?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, so I got distracted looking at that list of 120 songs. I kept veering off to watch YouTube videos, you know, Sheena Easton songs. So, but I thought for sure it would have been one of those 120 songs.
Oh,
you got me again.
I did. You know, I get distracted,
strut out and put it up. And then no give it.
Oh, totally. Right. No, I personally get distracted on some Shakira videos.
Oh, Shakira.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I go down a little rabbit hole there.
Yeah.
And
put a warning up, folks.
I mean, I know. Right.
You know, so you can go into the kitchen and get something. Yeah.
Or the bathroom. Anyway, so today, Bob, we're going to be covering a really cool issue. You know, this was came out in 1981, as I mentioned. Had a release date of April 7th, 1981, but it had a cover date of July 1981. And this was a few years before Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars came out, right? Which Mike Zeck was the artist for that as well. And so Doc Ock was in that, Cap was in that. But this is really the first time that we're seeing the two of them kind of go at it. And, you know, Jim Shooter is the plotter for this. Dave Michelinie is the scripter. And I think when we had Jim Shooter on the show way back in episode 65, and I highly recommend check out episode 65 if you have not, and listen to Jim Shooter's interview, because we asked some really great questions and he's very honest and he's very forthright in some of these. But, you know, one of the lamer questions we asked him was about this particular issue. And we asked him, like, you know, where did you come up with the idea, you know, for Doc Ock versus Cap? And he was pretty forthcoming in talking about, you know, the impetus for that idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's fun just to cover it, Rick, because, you know, it's something out of the ordinary and it's a great story and it has a great ending. And I'm excited to get into it because I want to talk about some stuff in this book.
Yeah. I don't know about you. Did you get a little choked up at the ending?
A little choked up.
I got a little choked up.
A little choked up. I don't think I got a little choked up. No,
no, I did. I got a little choked up.
All right, we'll talk about
the whole
about
father-son
that.
Relationship thing.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. Touched a nerve, I think,
right,
for me.
All right. Let's hold that. Yeah. Hold that. Put a pin in that and let's circle back around to that when we get to the end.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do that. What's going on in your life this week, Bob?
Well, it's just, you know, it's a busy week, Rick. We're winding down season for, you know, I run this nonprofit that does a lot of environmental conservation work, and we lead guided hikes and recreation programs. And of course, it's starting to get into the rainy season. So a lot of that slackens off, especially a lot of our part-time residents down here start to move back up north. And so we don't have the demand for our programs, and you got to be really hardy to want to get out there in the trails when there's a foot or two of water over the trail. So that's slacking off, and it's the end of the semester for the university where I teach part-time as well. So it's just wrapping up grading and trying to figure out how many students are going to pass and how many are going to be begging me for extensions and incompletes and things like that. So, so I'm just trying to, you know, churn my way through that sort of thing, but I'm looking forward to this weekend. I'm going to a Kentucky Derby party. I don't normally go out to, you know, parties.
Are you going to Kentucky?
No, we're not going to Kentucky, but I am going to drink. So, it's a colleague at the university invited me and my wife, Casey, to this Kentucky Derby party on Saturday night, promised there would be mint juleps. And I've heard through the grapevine that mint juleps have bourbon in them. Mm. So I was, you know, I signed up for that one right away. So I am looking forward to that.
Do you have your fancy hat all ready to go?
Yeah, I'm torn. I've got one of those big hats that I wear when I'm out working in the garden, but I also have my Vietnamese pith helmet from the North Vietnamese Army. I was considering, you know, just kind of putting a flower in that.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah. You totally should do that.
Yeah, or I could wear my Captain America, you know, baseball cap. I don't know. It's such a tough decision.
Yeah. Yeah. You got, but you know what? You've got some good choices there.
I do.
And nice I want pictures.
Yeah. Okay.
I want proof. Cause as the kids say, if there's no pictures, it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. Right. What about you? What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Oh, Bob. So I posted in the Facebook group, and of course, you know, this is coming out several weeks later. So this is old news for everybody in the Facebook group, but I did get this week, a art piece, probably the last published art piece I'm going to get for quite some time because my budget is already tapped out. But I did win this back in the beginning of April, and I just recently got it. And it is a page to Captain America White, that miniseries by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. Mm-hmm. And this is issue 5, page 4. And it's a really cool page because it's got the Red Skull. It's got Cap on a motorcycle. It's got Bucky. And so, you know, it's got all the major players from World War II.
Right.
And there's a nice half page splash of Cap on a motorcycle riding up the Eiffel Tower. So it's really cool. So that's the new thing going on with me.
Now, that was a great series, but
it was.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I probably am.
I always do, Bob.
But there was a long hiatus, right, between the beginning of that series and
there was. I want to say that the series ended in 2016, right? So there was, I want to say five. Yeah, there was 5 issues, mm-hmm. but there was also a 0 issue.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. The 0 issue came out, I'm going to say 2008, something like that.
Yeah.
Because I still have my store. I have my comic book store back when it came out.
Yeah.
And that was like the kind of like, hey, here's this miniseries that's coming out soon. Yeah. And there was a poster. It was a horizontal poster of Cap holding up a shield up close, mm-hmm. and a retailer poster, and then nothing.
Yeah.
And then nothing. And then eventually the miniseries came out probably 2015 and ended in 2016. Mm. So, unfortunately Tim Sale passed away last year.
Right.
And, this artwork went probably a little bit higher than I was hoping it would go. When an artist passed and people know that, there's no new published artwork coming,
right?
What's out there in the inventory is what you got. Then all of a sudden, you know, there's a demand versus supply and so prices tend to raise. So I did have a couple of years ago, I had a page from this actual issue of Captain America White number 5, and it was the very last page, and it was a really cool page. It was a half page splash as well, and it was Cap in modern time, riding away on a motorcycle, holding up a shield, and there's a flag, almost mm-hmm. like riding off into the sunset.
Yeah,
very cool thing. And I remember talking to you about it, and you were uh-huh. like, there's no way that wind resistant could happen. You know, like, right. You made that comment because he's holding up his, like you see him driving away from behind, right. Driving off into the sunset and he's holding up his shield in his left arm. So you see the back of the shield.
Yeah.
The outer side of the shield towards the back, which means that this concave shield is catching all the wind as he's flying, as he's driving. And you would imagine, that's some like wind resistance right there.
Yeah.
And so ever since you said that, I was like, oh yeah, I don't like this page anymore.
Oh yes.
It's absolutely.
I can't believe how influential I am.
No, it's absolutely true. I can't tell you. I have some pieces that some people have made some snide comments, and I'm like, oh, I guess I don't like that anymore. So,
Well, thank goodness my wife doesn't have that reaction when people criticize me.
I end up trading the piece for a Mike Zeck fanzine cover, and. So I was very happy, that I got that. And then, you know, blah, 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 blah. People, you know, the listeners don't care. But anyway.
It's like that episode of The Office where Dwight, you know, they're having the flea market in the warehouse of Dunder Mifflin. And he starts with a paperclip and he wants to get he wanted to get something, you know, the most expensive item for sale that somebody was selling. And so he worked his way up, you know, trading the paperclip as he went up. So finally he got this expensive item, and then he got tricked by Jim into trading it for some magic beans.
I don't think I saw that episode.
Oh, it's
a
great episode.
That's fine.
All the bartering.
So that's what's going on with me. Yeah. Right.
Rick, I did have a really exciting development this week.
Do tell.
I'm a little bit of a, you know, I like a little bit of the handicrafts, and I'm not very good at anything. But I sometimes get these ideas in my head and I'm like, I'm going to do this. So you may not recall, but it was maybe a year ago, I posted this image, from, what was it? I can't even remember now what Captain America was. It issue like 605 or something. I don't know. It was the one where Cap went to the small town and they were having the Captain America fair.
Oh yeah. 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 That was Mark Waid and Chris Samney. Yeah.
And you know, and there was this one thing on a table that I had like drawn an arrow pointing to. And basically it was like a desktop statue of Cap encased in ice.
Right. And I'm like, I do remember that.
Why
I
hasn't
do.
Anybody like produced that statue yet? Right.
Uh-huh.
So I've been like obsessing about this ever since. So I've been thinking like, oh, how am I know I want to do that. Like I've got some Cap action figures. I could like freeze them in ice and I would probably use the one, you know, that has him, you know, wearing his World War II uniform with the, you know, they have that Hasbro figure. And I'm like, well, that's an expensive, you know, I got to find that. And then that's a big block of acrylic. And I thought, maybe I'm going to start small. I'm going to make like a paperweight. And so I got the little Lego figure. Of Cap, you know, from the first Avenger. And so he's got his, you know, his uniform, his army uniform on. You can see the Cap uniform peeking out from underneath it. And then I've been looking for the perfect rock. And it surprised me how hard it has been to find the perfect rock. And so I've picked up rocks here and there. And then finally this week, when I was walking across campus, I found the holy grail of rocks. And so this is
really,
you can't see it, viewers, but this is my holy grail of rocks right here.
Oh, well, all right, let's describe this to the listeners. It is a if I had to guess, it may be like 4 or 5 inches tall.
It's probably 4 inches tall
where I come from, Bob. That's 8 inches.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
So that and maybe like 2 inches deep.
Yeah. Two inches deep, 2 inches wide.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's got a little flat bottom kind of, so it would stand up and around a top. And so what I have to do is I have some molding compound where I would press this in the molding compound to create the mold. And then I have a clear acrylic that you mix the compound and you pour it into the mold and it will harden into clear plastic.
Okay.
And so I have the little Lego figure that I will embed into the clear plastic. And then when it dries and hardens, it will be a clear plastic paperweight, the size of that rock, size and shape of that rock with Cap embedded in it.
Oh,
and
that's
going to be my Cap in the ice paperweight.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Totally fun. I recall somebody posted in the Facebook group, and I don't remember. I don't remember exactly who. Something tells me maybe it was Heath. Heath, you know, from our moderator, one of our moderators. Maybe it was Grant. I don't know. But somebody had posted an action figure, a Captain America action figure.
Right.
That somebody put into like a plastic thing, filled it with water, put it in the freezer. And here's this Captain America frozen in ice, like literally a Captain America action figure frozen in ice.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's brilliant and it fun. Is.
Think of how great, I mean, wouldn't that be a great like statue for your, you know, your display. If you had, you know, like a Hasbro sized action figure embedded in a chunk of ice, kind of lit from the bottom, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be an amazing collectible. But
that would be fun. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. And when you finish that, you absolutely have to post pictures in the Facebook group.
Oh, I will.
Group.
Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of the Facebook group, we posted episode 133, which was our nightcap issue with Catman. And
yeah,
you know, the Jason Olson, mm-hmm. who is, you know, writer of the Mark Gruenwald book, and was in recently in episode 134. He actually replied to Catman's post or our post, which had Catman.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, he listened to the episode and he thought it was great. And then he said, you and Rick and Bob were a wonderful soundtrack for me as I cleaned my backyard today. And I was thinking, how do people listen to us? Right. Cause I know for me, when I listen to podcasts, it's typically on my drive to and from work, or I'm at the gym and I'm working out.
Yeah.
Or quite frankly, yeah, if I'm doing something in the yard, if I'm doing yard work, if I'm mowing, recently this week, I had my pressure washer out and I was pressure washing the patio and the back deck. I was listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. I wasn't listening to our podcast because I'm not narcissistic, but you know, but anyway, I'm curious about like, how do you listen to podcasts? And if so, when and how?
I really don't. I don't listen to podcasts, Rick.
You only create them?
Well, you know, it's because, you know, I do have a somewhat long commute, but my car is a 2009 Nissan Altima. And there's only one of those auxiliary jack buttons, you know, plugs where you can plug in your tape player. And so my wife, you know, when we go on a trip over to see the in-laws or something over or other side, other coast, we listen to podcasts because she just like Bluetooths them from her phone over to the Equinox and, you know, it works great, but I'm in my car, not doesn't work that way. So I could like hold the phone up, I guess, and listen to them or wear headphones, which I'm not going to do when I drive. So I generally listen to NPR when I'm
okay.
Or Bob
you
FM.
Know, so here's one of the things that I suggest, Bob. You know, there are little portable Bluetooth speakers that you can buy. It's real cheap.
Some of those, yeah.
Right? Take one of those and put them in your car. And I prior to me hooking up my jack into my car, that's what I did. I would take the Bluetooth speaker and I would put it in the car and I would play my podcast through that so that I could listen to through that as opposed to, you know, through my phone, like you said, up to close to your ear or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you just have a Bluetooth speaker, that's loud enough that you can hear it in your car.
It could be. I have a little Boba Fett one. It was a bit itty bitty or whatever it is I bought from I could use that. And in fact, it has a little loop. I could just hang that around my ear like a Christmas ornament, you know, because I'm a little hard of hearing. So
what's
I
that?
Have to be, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good idea though. Maybe I'll try that. There are a couple podcasts that I do like that I used to listen to as I walked about the neighborhood, but I gave up walking.
Yeah. Who needs to do that?
I don't, you know, I'm not going anywhere. I just end up back where I started.
All right. So listen, listeners, we typically reveal who are next guest is going to be the episode before. We're two episodes away before our next guest.
Yeah.
But you know what? If you stick around to the very end of this episode, we're going to let you know who it is.
You are the gift that keeps giving.
Bob.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
Why is this
just
funny?
Nervous, I guess. I don't know.
You know who the guest is going to be, Bob.
Yeah, I know, but I'm still excited.
Yeah, okay. Well, good for you.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, so stick around to the very end, and we'll let you know who that guest is going to be. All right. So, Bob, should we get to the issue that we're covering today?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we should.
All right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
So, as we mentioned before, it's Captain America 259. This had a release date of April 7th, 1981. So, it was in the stands, on your rack, in the comic book shops, April of 1981. It had a cover date of July 1981. The cover is done by Mike Zeck and somebody I've never heard of before, Bob. Irv Watanabe.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've heard the name.
Really?
Yeah, Watanabe. Yeah.
Okay.
Not the actor, but I've seen Watanabe credited before on different books. I can't recall off the top of my head, but I do recall.
Oh, excellent. All right. It was written by, and I mentioned this before, the plot was by Jim Shooter and the script by David Michelini, penciler Mike Zeck. Inker is credited to Quick Draw Studios. Now, Quick Draw Studios was an inker by the name of Frank McLaughlin, and then he had some help, essentially. So he had some other people. Colorist Roger Slifer. Not a name I've heard before. Letterer, Jim Novak, and then the editor, Jim Salakrup. I don't have a solicitation for this one, Bob.
Outrageous.
I know. Oh, you know what's interesting about this issue, though, Bob? And I think you even mentioned this before about the movie Poltergeist.
You're right. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead and tell the listeners what's really cool about this particular issue.
Well, there's a scene in Poltergeist, and you know, it's funny, I can't remember the young boy's name, but I do remember Carol was the young girl in Poltergeist.
No, it was Caroline, wasn't it?
Caroline, you're right. Caroline, don't go into the light. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she had an older brother, and he was in a particular scene. He was reading an issue of Captain America, and it was this issue.
Yeah, because Poltergeist came out the following year, 1982. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's kind of cool, right?
That is cool.
So speaking of the cover, Bob, tell the listeners about the cover.
All right, Rick. Well, it looks like we are inside of a garage of some sort. We can figure that out because in the background, there are some of those doors, you know, with all the rows of windows that are the kind that either roll up or open wide to allow vehicles in. You can't really tell, but we're inside some facility. And in the foreground, we see from the back, we see Doc Ock himself from the waist up. So the camera view is very close to Doc Ock. And mm-hmm. and we see he's got, interestingly, you know, he's got those white goggles, white glasses that he wears, which are weird because they're almost like gargoyle glasses. Strange. Mm. Anyway, different guy. Anyway, he's got, you know, obviously Doc Ock has four arms and he's got two of them clamped on the cap shield.
He actually has six.
He has six? I thought he had four.
He has four mechanical arms.
Oh, Rick, you are a man of precision. Okay. Right. So yes, he's got four mechanical arms and two biological arms. And so two of the mechanical arms are holding cap shield above Doc Ock's own head. And in the background, we see Cap. And he has a bit of a shocked expression on his face as if he's just been surprised. And he is grappling with two of the other of Doc Ock's mechanical arms. So we don't know what's going on here, but there is some sort of conflict, and it appears to be that it has taken the good captain by surprise.
So you say Cap is grappling with those arms, which means he's fighting them, right? He actually has the arms in his
yeah, he's holding his, on to those
his
arms.
Fists, right? Like he's he's holding those arms because the arms are attacking him, but he's grabbing the arms and stopping the arms from attacking him.
Yeah.
He's got his back up against a wooden pier. And by the way, 50 cents, Bob. 50 cents gets you this comic back in 1981. So they still have the John Byrne corner box logo left over from the John Byrne and Roger Stern run. Now, here's something interesting. And by the way, you didn't mention it, but we do get to see Doc Ock, not just his arms. We see Doc Ock himself, right? You mentioned his white glasses. Yeah. But we get to see his upper torso and his body. Then it says it had to happen. Cap battles Doc Ock. Now, when you hear the phrase it had to happen, it sounds like it's never happened before.
It does sound that way.
Right?
Yeah.
If you say something, it had to happen, like that means it had to finally happen. Right? It was an eventual kind of happen. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. So, as far as I know, Cap and Doc Ock haven't fought before.
That's what they're telling us.
Right. Now, here's an interesting fact, Bob.
Okay.
There was a previous cover to this that never got published. And it is, if you saw it, it's actually really cool. So if you go ahead and Google Captain America 259 unpublished cover, you will see an uncolored black and white version of this cover with the trade dress and the logo and the corner box and everything. They actually looks like they were close to going to press. It was penciled, it was inked, it just hadn't gotten colored yet. Jim Shooter shot it down. He didn't like it. And why? Because in this original version that Mike Zeck did, it is Cap up against the wall, and rather than grappling with him holding Doc Ock's arms in his hands, Doc Ock's arms are pinning him back. And you see all four arms holding Captain America back. So you have one holding his left wrist, one holding his right wrist, one wrapped around his right, his left leg, another one holding back his right leg. So he is very vulnerable in this particular issue. And you don't see Doc Ock. You just see his four arms, right? There's no Doc Ock in this. And Jim Shooter said, I don't like the cover. It shows Cap in a very vulnerable situation. And he challenged Zeck to do a new cover, which is the one you described.
Yeah. I like this. I got to tell you, I like this cover. Shooter's criticisms notwithstanding. And I see that it was used for issue 103 of Back Issue Magazine on the cover.
Yes.
And that's a cool cover. It's very dynamic, I think. You know, it captures a moment of time. And of course, Cap might have been taken by surprise. I don't think we have to read too much into it, but I think it's a really cool cover. Would have been.
Yeah, no, I agree. There was a point where, you know, I never owned a Zeck Captain America cover. And I was like, well, do I pull the trigger on this? It's pretty expensive, but it's not nearly as expensive as a published cover. And I consider buying it because it was for sale.
Wow.
And somebody else ended up buying it instead, which was fine because as cool as the cover it is unpublished. And so, although to your point, it was published on a magazine.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It was used, but yeah.
So technically it was published.
Huh. Well, very cool.
All right. So we open up the issue and we get to the opening page. Bob, you know what? Do you want to read the the caption that comes before where it says Stan Lee presents. Do you want to read the little inscription that describes what Captain America comics are all about in case someone's never read these before?
In case they're completely unfamiliar with the character, I would absolutely love to do that and be the one that introduces them. In fact, you might say take their Cap virginity. Yes.
Whoa.
1940. As the world teetered on the brink of global war, frail Steve Rogers entered a secret laboratory and was transformed into the American super soldier. For four thrilling years, he battled the Axis powers until a freak stroke of fate threw him into suspended animation. When he awoke, he was a man decades out of time. Since that fateful day, Steve Rogers has sought his destiny in this brave new world.
Very nice. So Stan Lee presents Captain America, and it then goes through the credits. And so we see a Captain America, Steve Rogers. I guess we see a Steve Rogers, right? Because he's not in uniform.
Yeah.
And he's laying in bed and he's sleeping. And you see shadows of his windowsill on his person, on his bed, as he's laying there asleep. His name is Steve Rogers. By day, he treads a precarious balance between two lives, that of a struggling commercial artist and that of a star-spangled Avenger known as Captain America. Unfortunately, his nights are often spent the same way. And even when he does find a fleeting moment's sleep, the slumber is shallow, for the battle-honed senses coiled just beneath the surface of his consciousness are ready to spring at the slightest disturbance, such as a sudden chill or a swiftly passing shadow, which we do see a shadow on his body. Or, and then Cap sits up and he looks all surprised. What? Oh, must have been a dream. But for a moment, I could almost swear that someone had stepped on my grave. And then we see the title to this particular issue, Bob.
Rite of Passage.
So we cut to the next page.
Hold on, I want to ask you a question here, Rick.
Yeah.
Obviously, Steve, he sleeps shirtless. Are you a sleep shirtless sort of guy? Or
I am not, Bob. No, I'm
not either.
I am a t-shirt, and yeah. I have some very light, like, sweat shorts.
Yeah, all right.
You know,
yeah,
that
yeah.
I wear that are yeah. very, right. let's just say, easy access.
In case you have to get up and pee. Yeah, I know. I got that. It happens when you get older. I know. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, I wondered. I mean, some guys like to sleep shirtless.
Yeah. Do you?
I don't. No, I find it uncomfortable to sleep shirtless. I gotta have, you know, I gotta have my sleeping t-shirt. So
yeah. Do you have the same sleeping shirt t-shirt every night?
No. I, you know, whatever I have, you know, a dozen different t-shirts and I just cycle through them. And, you know, usually they have holes in the armpits. I don't know why that happens. Somebody hasn't explained that properly to me, why one gets holes in the armpits of t-shirts, but it happens. So, I mean, I was just curious. You
should
know?
Try,
I mean,
deodorant, Bob.
I think
it's
helpful. if I had a physique like Steve Rogers, I might, you know, might sleep shirtless. I don't know, but maybe not, you know.
Curious. And then you're clothesless from the waist down, because you didn't mention anything.
No, I don't wear anything from the waist down. It's just a t-shirt. Yeah.
Talk about easy access.
Oh, watch it, Cap. Okay. Yeah.
So the next page, Cap sits up and he says, "Ah, well, whatever it was, I'm awake now. And since it's almost 6 o'clock, I might as well burn a couple of eggs, get my fighting gear on, and put a change of clothes into my portfolio. I've just enough time for a quick workout at Avengers Mansion before I have to turn that display art into the agency." And of course, Zach demonstrates, you know, Cap cooking and Cap putting his stuff into his case. And then, this is cool, right? Middle of the page, nice little large panel. I like this. Mm-hmm. We see Cap jumping out into the city from the night. I don't know. What do you call that?
That skylight thing?
Yeah, skylight. Sure, yeah. We'll call it that. Yeah.
Yeah.
6:30 a.m. The sun is a three-quarter circle of the eastern horizon as Captain America bounds into the dawnlit sky over Brooklyn Heights. Smiling as he feels the morning wind brush his face, as he notes the smooth ripple of muscles beneath his chainmail shirt. For these sensations mean one thing to him. Freedom. It is a concept he adores, an emotion he savors, a reality he protects. And it is a satisfaction so consuming that he fails to notice a sinisterly skulking figure watching his every move. And so we get to see Cap doing acrobatics going through the city, right? He's jumping around. He's jumping onto a fire escape. He's got a shield in one hand and he's hopping off of a water tower, right? But Bob, what is there? What is that we see?
It's as if somebody is they've opened like a one of those rooftop door thingies, you know.
A door thingy.
Yeah, it's a door thingy.
That's a scientific term.
Yeah, well, you know, I was an architect for 4 years, so it's a door thingy. And
so was George Costanza. Right.
So he's peeking out and observing Cap moving across the skyline.
Yeah. And then that creepy skulking person thinks to himself,
"There, at last. I knew I'd find him if I looked long enough."
And Cap fails to notice, that is, until a sound from the rooftop behind me, like metal scraping metal. Could be nothing, but I've known too many good men who died for ignoring such nothings. I better check it out. And then he does like a reverse flip, right? He's bounding one way and then he decides to circle back. However, no one here and there aren't any fire escapes. No way for someone to get off the roof in a hurry. I guess that sound could have been my imagination. But I still can't shake the feeling of being watched. And then the last two panels, we do see a shadow kind of like underneath the scenes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shadowed figures peering at him.
But of course, if you saw the cover, you know who it is.
Yeah, we know already.
All right, there's no surprise. Yeah. It's Doc
Dr.
Ock.
Hyde.
Dr. what?
Hyde. I mean, Mr. Hyde.
Is he hiding and seeking? What the hell, Bob? That's Doc Ock.
I know. I'm just having a little fun, Rick.
You're not having fun. I'm totally goofed up there.
I'm trying to throw you off the trail, man.
You messed up. Just a minute.
I'm not messing up, man.
Why are you giving me the finger?
I don't want to give the spoiler away again, man. It could be anybody.
Uh-huh. We saw the cover, Bob. It's Doc Ock.
All right, fine.
Right. And the whole metal against metal. What do you think that was, Bob?
I don't know. You know, it could be anything. It's a city.
Uh-huh.
It could be a rusty air conditioning unit.
You never know. Right. So Cap then leaps over to the next building and he thinks to himself, so if someone is tailing Captain America, maybe it's time for the good captain to drop out of sight.
Moments later, the skulking figure follows only to find nothing. I've lost him. But he was heading north when I disappeared, and I have a good notion as to where he was going.
With singular determination, the mysterious stalker boards the next uptown train, paying little heed to a tall man with an art portfolio who rides in the same car, and who, unbeknownst to either of them, is bound for the same destination, Avengers Mansion. Midtown Manhattan headquarters of the Earth's mightiest heroes. An imposing structure where, some time later, after a coded identity card, has assured clearance through one of the world's most sophisticated security systems that looks like an ATM.
still uses a coded security card.
Right. That looks like an ATM, right, Bob?
It does. It does look like an ATM.
Captain America is greeted by the Avengers' loyal and seemingly never sleeping butler. Morning, Jarvis. I just thought I'd grab a quick workout before the others rise. Certainly, sir. The gymnasium facilities are at your disposal, as always. Though, if you'll forgive my curiosity, Master Cap, I've often wondered why you don't reside here at the mansion. I'm certain that Anthony Stark, the Avengers' benefactor, would provide a generous stipend in lieu of outside employment, and that way you'd be free to utilize the mansion's training apparatus at your leisure. And then it's a really cool panel, right? Because we see Cap working out on the various, you know, mostly gymnastic type of, right? There's the horse that he's going over, and then he's got the hanging,
the inverted sit-ups,
right, and all those, and so Cap's working out, but he replies, perhaps, Jarvis, but before I became Captain America, I was a civilian, and I suppose there's still a part of me that wants to enjoy the liberties I fight for in that same way, just as any other man. Yes, sir, I quite understand. And shortly after the intense exercise program has been completed, you know how you know it's intense, Bob?
He's sweating.
He is.
Yeah, he's mopping his brow.
Yeah, he's got a little towel. He's wiping up that perspiration. Pardon me, sir, but this letter just arrived for you this morning post. It's from a Mr. Coulson. Coulson? Ray Coulson? I haven't heard that name since the war. I'd almost forgotten it. But this is the same man, and he says he needs my help. After all these years. The cleanup shower is warm, the water soothing, relaxes Steve Rogers in both body and mind, and sends his thoughts drifting, sifting, through memories recently revived, flowing back to the battlefields of World War II, shortly before freak circumstances had trapped him in suspended animation for nearly two decades. An enemy machine gun nest had been battering Allied troops, pinning them across a deep mountain chasm. And their only hope had been an airstrike promised by Allied headquarters. But then a courier named Ray Coulson, had arrived with word that air support had been indefinitely postponed. It was then that Captain America had borrowed the courier's motorbike, with young Corporal Coulson's eager and patriotic permission, and by utilizing a naturally formed base rock ramp to jump the chasm, he had created his own air support. And that's pretty cool, right? He takes the courier's motorcycle, and then he uses that to go across the chasm to get to the area that had been firing on his platoon.
Indeed. Indeed. And that's a great final panel there, right? Where he's slugging it out with a couple krauts.
Is that your favorite panel, Bob?
I'm not going to say, Rick.
As a result, countless American lives have been saved and at least one Allied victory had been assured. Ray Coulson was there when our boys needed him. And if he needs me now, the least I can do is the most I can do. Oh, Bob. I really wish that was your motto.
I know. That seems like that should be on the next challenge coin.
Because I know, you know, Bob, your motto has always been, the least I can do is, well, the least I can do.
No, it's the least I can do is pretty much all I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. We know that.
Okay.
So then Jarvis sees Steve Rogers, who is in his civilian clothes, and he's leaving with his art portfolio. And what is Jarvis doing at this point, Bob?
He appears to be dusting the table, perhaps with some lemon pledge.
He does, doesn't he? Leaving Master Cap? For the moment, Jarvis. But I'll be back to drop off my portfolio after I deliver this artwork. And then Captain America has a debt to pay. An hour later, after the aforementioned return to Adventure's mansion and a short trip downtown, this is the address Ray gave me in his letter. I might have known he'd be still involved with motorcycles. And it's like a, you know, mechanic's garage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's an older gentleman in a flannel shirt and jeans, and he's working on a motorcycle. Mr. Coulson. John, is that you, son? I was hoping that... Oh, my. It's you. Captain America. And he comes up and he shakes his hand. I couldn't believe it. You actually came to see me. The pleasure's mine, Ray. Want to talk? The former soldiers adjourn to the cycle shop office, where a cold beer is offered, declined, and explanation begins. That's interesting that, you know, they made a point that Steve turned down a cold beer. Why do you think that is?
It's working hours. He's in uniform.
Does that stop you, Bob?
No. No, it hasn't. It hasn't.
That's right, Captain. It's my son, John. A few weeks back, he took all the money from the cash register and ran off with some biker gang called the Huns. But why didn't you call the police? Because the money isn't important. It's John that matters. You see, he had a rough time growing up, what with his mom dying early on. And I'm afraid I've never been too good at showing affection. So while I tried to do the right by him, I guess we were never as close as we should have been. Here's his picture. He's a great, great looking kid, isn't he? He's a fine boy, Ray. I assume you want me to bring him back? No, Captain, I can't control John's life. Never could. I just want you to find him and, well, just tell him I'm sorry. All right, Ray. I'll try. Somber thoughts follow Captain America as he leaves the cycle shop. Deadly thoughts greet him as he emerges. I've always considered waiting to be curse of lesser men. But this time I must have patience. I must wait until the ideal moment arrives to strike.
Who could that be?
I don't know, Bob. It's so hard to tell. Captain America's quest is not a difficult one. The Huns are not known for their low profile. A phone call to a friend in the police department gives his search direction, and scattered bits of information along the way give it detail. Where did he get that scattered bits of information, Bob?
Well, I mean, the panels show he's on the phone with the police, and then he's at the local tap house talking to the barkeep. And then it looks like he's, I don't know, is he talking to a bus driver or a taxi driver? He seems to be peering from the back of the of where the passengers are and talking to the driver. So you know, he's pulling bits of information from the grapevine. So they say,
working the rounds until at last the trail leads to a converted barn near Sourtees, New York, a ramshackle building whose physical decay. Ramshackle, Bob, do you know that word? Ramshackle.
Yeah, ramshackle, broken down. Yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
Comic fans learning new words all the time. A ramshackle building whose physical decay is echoed by the symbols of moral decay that adjourn its internal walls. Swastikas and crosses that chill the Avenger's soul even more than the flippant words that welcome him. What are we looking at here, Bob?
We are looking at a bunch of ne'er-do-wells and ruffians, Rick. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's what, six of them? Maybe seven, right? There's who appears to be the leader, some long-haired hippie dude with his vest open, exposing his bare chest, and he's reclining on a couch. And We see a couple other gang leaders, and there's a couple women there, including a very large bald one. And so it looks like a cross between what might be a gang of some sort and, you know, hippies of some sort. I don't know. I don't know what we've got here. But the motorcycles out front suggest that that might be a motorcycle gang.
Talk about sleeping with your shirt off. These guys walk around in the daytime with their shirts off, Bob.
Yeah, or wearing vests, which is an odd fashion choice, you know.
Well, it was 1981, Bob.
It was. Yeah.
Some people hold on to the 70s as long as they can.
I guess so, yeah. Didn't have this option in eighth grade, so.
Well, what do we got here? A walking flag?
Nah. Man, that's Cappy America.
Sorry, dude. The Huns don't get no openings for new members right now.
I didn't come to join your club, mister. I came to talk to one of your men. That one. John Coulson. And he points to him.
What? Me?
Sorry, flag man. Your costume don't mean spit here. And no one talks to a Hun unless that Hun wants to be talked to. So maybe you better split, man, before we have to clip them cute little wings of yours. Hey, Soul Dad, why don't we put this big bad Avenger to a test? Make him prove he's worthy of talking to a Hun.
Good idea, Turk. How's about it, hero? Are you man enough?
And while Soul Dad's eyes kind of light up.
Yeah, and
he's
apparently
got a little Charles Manson thing going there.
He does have a very an eerie resemblance to Chuck. And Turk apparently is not a woman.
Mm.
I mischaracterized Turk.
Man enough that I don't have to prove it. But if that's what it takes, what do you say, John? And I like the expression on Cap's face here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's being challenged. His manhood is being challenged. And he just looks disappointed.
Yeah. Right.
Right? He's like,
right. Yeah.
Do we really have to do this, guys? Like, that, right? That's kind of the look he's got on his face.
Yeah.
So John replies, okay, sure. Why not? You passed the test. I'll listen. And soon, what are we seeing here?
This is crazy. It's like a half-page splash, right? And and it's got Cap standing in the middle of this garage, and he's got ropes tied around his wrists, one on each wrist, and the ends of each rope are tied to the back of a motorcycle that is pointing in the opposite direction. So, goodness, that seems like it could be painful.
Yeah. Now, Cap does have it, like you said, around his wrist, but he's also gripping the rope.
Yes, he is gripping it. Yes.
So, this is your idea of a test, huh?
That's right, fancy pants. If you could take this full-out pull from a pair of chopped Harleys, you're man enough to talk to a Hun. Okay, Turk. Reaper, rev him up and rip him apart.
And again, he's got those maniacal eyes, right? Modified engines roar. Sawdust spits from spinning wheels. And Captain America stands steadfastly, barely straining to withstand pressures that would tear the limbs from a normal man. But it is then that an unexpected player enters the game. As with a muffled crash, one wall of the barn shatters inward, giving entrance to a man who had recently been a stalking shadow, and who is now stands revealed as Dr. Octopus. And there it is, Bob.
Who knew?
This
who
whole time, that skulky shadow was Dr. Octopus.
Who would have guessed?
Well, if you saw the cover.
Shh.
You probably would have gave it away, Bob.
Indeed, Avenger. I've been looking for you ever since the media began reporting your frequent appearances around Brooklyn Heights. And once I found you, I followed you, waiting for the right opportunity. This opportunity, Captain. And he grabs his shield. I've heard that your shield is comprised of an alloy even stronger than antimanium. And since I've had problems with the durability of my cybernetic arms of late... When was that, Bob?
That, I think, was featured in a Spectacular Spider-Man Annual number 1, as well as in Daredevil 165, Rick.
So he grabs Cap's shield as he's, you know, tied between those two motorcycles, and he appears to be running off with it. Studying the composition of this much-vaunted disc could help me improve my already formidable extensions. Do forgive me if I forget to return it when I'm through. No, no one takes my shield. No one. Ever. And he takes the ropes and he pulls them back and basically snaps the motorcycles from going any further.
Not only that, Rick, but I don't know if you noticed, but he actually tore the back end off the motorcycle.
Yeah, indeed. You're insane, Octopus. Criminally insane. And I'm going to stop you. Now. And he takes the one end of the broken rope, which was tied to the back of a motorcycle, which still has, you know, that back on, which creates kind of like an anchor. And he takes that rope and he throws it and he ties it around Dr. Octopus's legs. Eh? Ropes. Binding my legs. Really, Avenger? After all the times I fought Spider-Man to a standstill, do you honestly think mere hempen strands can hold me? And sure enough, his octopus arms snap those ropes. No, but I can, especially since those mere hempen strands slowed you up long enough for me to catch you. And he jumps up at him and he hits his torso and the momentum takes them through the barn wall. You're strong, Captain, and much more persistent than I anticipated. But I am Dr. Octopus, and I shall brook no further interference from... And he, you know, uses his long legs to get away from Cap, and he's holding his shield in his hand. Holding onto one of my arms, still following. Very well, Captain. I didn't want to fight you. I only wanted your shield. And he takes... one arm and he pushes him up against that post that we talked about on the cover, right? But now you shall pay for your stubborn perseverance with your life. And he takes the shield in the other arm. So one arm is wrapping him around a pole. And then the other arm has a shield and uses a shield to try to like decapitate Cap. But Cap bends at the right time. Bad move, Octopus. You should never let me get close enough to my shield to grab it. Now you're going to find out just how hard that shield is. And he takes the shield away from Dr. Octopus. And he throws it. First hand. What a panel, Bob. The panel comes and just nails Doc Ock back. And what's it say, Bob? What's it say, Bob?
Kavok!
And what does Doc Ock say? I know these chains aren't strong enough to hold Doc Ock once he comes around, but hopefully they'll serve long enough for me to finish what I came here to do. And he does. He wraps the chains around Doc Ock's arms and he hoists them up. Now, Bob, that's a pretty cool page, wouldn't you say?
That is a cool page. Yeah.
Maybe be pretty cool to own it, wouldn't it?
It might be.
Yeah. And that was the second published page I ever bought.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I have it right here.
Well, what do you know?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
Yeah. I really wanted that page because that whole knocking out of Doc Ock, that is spectacular.
Indeed.
That used to be a page I had framed up on my wall, on my Mike Zeck wall. But now I'm actually offering it for sale.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm one of those people. Yeah. Here's the thing. I only have so much wall space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of those very few, unfortunately, believers that think original art, because, you know, original art's cool, right? Because you're the only one who owns that. Like, if you were to say, I have Captain America 259,
mm-hmm.
well, great. So thousands of other people have sure. that issue. But only one person can have that page because right. it's a unique item. So that was one of the cool things about original art. And that's why it's expensive. But my belief when it comes to original art is it's made to be seen, not to be hidden away. So while my comics might be sitting in a box or in a shelf or something like that, that I can go to and go through them and look them up and go, oh, I'll pull this one out. Great. To me, art shouldn't be the same thing. Art shouldn't sit in a portfolio that's hidden away for me to occasionally look at. Art should always be there, out there for me to appreciate. And so my walls in my Captain America man cave, my basement, my finished basement, I have, you know, all these different things that are framed and for me to appreciate. And some of them are not framed, but whatever, they're out for me to see and appreciate. When I get to the point where I run out of space and I have more art than I can display for me to see, then it's time for me to sell it or trade it or whatever. And so I'm at the point now where I've gotten some really cool Mike Zeck cap pages that, you know, maybe they're splash pages, you know, or maybe they're covers or whatever. It's time for me to move this on to somebody else to be the next curator of this art.
Yeah.
You know, who would yeah. appreciate it and yeah. who can, you know, put it on their wall and look at it and appreciate it.
Sure.
So that's where I'm at.
All right. Well,
I've had this page for several years.
Yeah.
And it's time to move on. But it is a very cool page. I mean, the fact that, you know, Cap is grabbing his shield in a way that we never see him in this second panel. We never see him grab his shield in that way.
It's like a discus throw.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Yeah. Not normally how he slings it.
So that's a unique panel by itself. But the middle panel is the money shot, right? That's seeing Doc Ock, a villain. It's not just any henchman.
What does that phrase mean? I've heard that.
Money shot?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You should probably Google that.
Okay. I'm not really up on finances, so that's why.
But to see in, you know, this big, large panel in the middle of the page, Doc Ock, a foe that he rarely goes up against, you know, and taking the shield, and knocking him out. And then in the other, you know, then you see him being chained up, you know?
Yeah.
And it's essentially every single panel either has Cap or his shield in it. So it was an amazing page, and I was so excited to have it, and I still love it. But you know, there's only so much space.
Maybe you need a bigger house.
I do need a bigger house. I really do. I do.
Problem solved.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we cut to the next page, and it is, you know, Cap pulling on the chain, which is taking Doc Ock up until in the air. And he kind of is waking up from being concussed by the shield. What? He dares truss me up like some slaughtered side of beef? You there, cyclist. I'll pay you $1,000 apiece to hold that costume cretin while I take his shield. And then you may watch as I... And then the leader of the Huns says, sorry, freak. Captain America's proved himself. In the Huns book, he's okay. So why don't you just look for your errand boys somewhere else? Blast you. And blast you, Avenger. You've won. I don't think he said blast you.
Comics Code Authority, darn you.
I had a friend today post a meme on Facebook, and it said said something like, hey, autocorrect, I didn't mean duck. I never mean duck. It never means duck.
I get that. For me, it would.
Yeah. Well, it's true.
I have a duck that reminded me. I'm going to digress here. I made a post today on Facebook. There was an old Far Side cartoon about the fear of a duck someplace somehow watching you. And it was a guy sitting at his desk, and then a skyscraper across like the way, there was one lone duck in the window, like way up, and it was watching this guy at his desk, right? And so it was the name of this phobia. I can't remember the name of the phobia, but it was the fear of a duck somehow watching you. And right next to this cartoon, I posted a picture. I was sitting at my desk here at my home office, and I took a picture. There's a window behind my computer, and outside there was a duck sitting on my front lawn just watching me.
That's classic.
Yeah, I know. Just looking at me. I'm like, all right, I know. Because they come here and they want me to come out and feed them. So he just stands there and stares at me through the window to like go out and drop down some bird seed.
No.
That does mean duck for me.
I guess so. I mean, that was a great story, Bob. Yeah. Thanks all for right. sharing.
Well, I wanted you to have time to eat your snacks, so.
Yeah. You know, I mean, most of our listeners didn't give a duck, but whatever. All right. And blast you, Avenger. You've won for now. But our paths shall cross again at a time when I've both the desire and the resources to take more than your shield. And when that time comes, Captain. And he uses his arms to break open the ceiling. Beware. And then he escapes. And I could be wrong, but I think the next time that Captain and Doc Ock meet each other is in Secret Wars in the Beyonder world.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Which is also drawn by Mike Zeck.
Yeah.
And also written by Jim Shooter. So what now, Flagman? You going after him? No need. Like the man said, we'll meet again. And anyway, I still have a message to deliver. Okay, hero. I'll keep my end of the bargain. Start talking. Quite simply, John, your father asked me to come here to apologize. He asked me to tell you he's sorry if he wasn't there every time you needed him, if he wasn't able to give all the affection you may have wanted. He said not to worry about the cash register money, that your being happy was really what really counted. That it? And he's standing there with his arms crossed, trying to look all tough and amongst his friends. That's it. You mean he didn't send you here to drag me back? No, that's your decision. Making up your own mind is part of growing. Big part. I've done what I can, John. I've done what I promised. The rest is up to you. And he walks away. And then here we have an epilogue. And it's 3 a.m. We see it's a row house in a suburban Queens. A door is opened and gently closed. So gently, the house's single occupant, Ray Coulson, doesn't stir from his exhausted sleep. Doesn't hear the soft footfalls approaching. Doesn't sense a once familiar presence. Until... and there's a hand on his shoulder. Huh? What? John! Say, Pop, had you better get up onto bed? If I'm going to work off that money I took, we'll have to open the shop pretty early. And that table doesn't look all too comfortable. John, I don't know what to say. You don't have to, Pop. You already said it. Well, I guess I'll sack out now. I'm kind of tired. We'll talk in the morning, okay? Sure, son. Good night and welcome home. And he's got his tear in his eye, Pop. And then after this epilogue is an addendum. 3 days later, Avengers Mansion. And we have, who's there, Bob?
Beast.
Yeah, it's the blue furry beast. He was part of the Avengers at this time. And he's there talking to Cap, who is sitting at a console. I guess he's probably monitor duty. I don't know. And so Beast is talking to Cap. So then I told him, Marlene, you got to be kidding. Even Avenger has to rest sometime. And then Jarvis walks in and interrupts him. Well, what do you think Beast was talking about there?
Beast is a randy dude.
He's randy?
He's randy, Rick. So I imagine he was talking about, you know, relations of some sort with a woman friend.
Is he randy, pal? Is he randy? Yeah, baby, yeah!
Exactly, yes.
Okay. So Jarvis comes in. Pardon me, Master Beast. I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's a gentleman to see Captain America. He says his name is Jonathan Coulson. John, here? Yes, sir. He's waiting in the foyer. And soon, Steve goes out to see John. And he's got a black T-shirt on. That's kind of like it has a number one on the chest, and it's a blue, red, white, and blue, right?
Right. Matches Cap.
It does. John, good to see you. Your father called to say you were back. How's it going? Well, there's still a few rough edges, but we're working on it. And they shake hands. Thanks to you, we've been talking to each other, really talking, for the first time in years. And it's terrific. You've given us a lot, Captain. Which reminds me, there's something I'd like to see. It's right out here. And opens up the door to go outside. And what's outside, Bob?
It's a motorcycle, Rick.
Well, what do you think? She's custom made from frame to forks. Heavy ammo all the way. The fastest street machine on the East Coast. I built her myself from scratch. For you. Joey, I'm flattered. It's a beautiful bike, but I'm afraid I can't accept rewards for... It's no reward, Cap. You once told me that making my own decisions was part of growing up. Well, so is paying my debts. And that's what I'm doing now. And he shakes his hand and puts the key in his palm. So without further ado, Private Citizen Jonathan Coulson requesting permission to return to duty, sir. And he salutes Cap. My dad's kind of busy at the shop. Permission granted, son. Good luck to both of you. Was that a good salute, Bob?
It was not.
Okay. Yeah, because it kind of goes over the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Cap smiles, and in his palm of his hand was the key. And he says, and thanks. The end, Bob.
Yeah. You know another part of growing up, Rick?
What's
your
that?
Your memory starts to fade. And you start calling people whose name's John. You start calling them Joey.
Yeah, he did do that. Yeah, I saw the look on your face.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Hey, Joey.
Second thing to go.
Is it? What's the first thing to go, Bob?
It's a family show, Rick.
You know, my dad had such a lousy joke. He used to say, oh yeah, and he was in his 50s at the time, so probably just a couple years older than you, maybe not, maybe even your age or younger.
Yeah,
or my age and younger. And he said, you know, when you get to my age, the memory is the second thing to go. And then he'd wait, and someone would say, what's the first thing? I don't remember.
It's a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Classic.
All right, what'd you think, Bob?
It's a fun story, Rick. It's a, you know, single issue fun story. It's got some action, it's got some emotion, you know, it's got some great art. You know, what's not to like about this issue?
I would say the fact that John Beatty didn't ink it.
Okay, fair. But it was 50 cents.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean,
that solves all ills, Bob.
It does. It does for, you know, somebody in eighth grade. So wrapping up eighth grade, getting ready to move up to the big old high school. Yeah. This was a good story.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite panel?
Do I have a favorite panel? I think I do, Rick. I think it's that last page, that picture, that panel of Cap seeing the motorcycle for the first time.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I like
love that one. You know, I'm not a big motorcycle guy. I used to have a Harley Davidson. I had a Harley Davidson.
Did you really?
I had a 1978 Harley Davidson FLH Electroglide. It was pumpkin orange, you know, had been repainted. And I eventually gave it to my brother, who had lost his Harley in a divorce. And so he had it shipped up to him from Arizona, uh-huh, up in Vermont, and he still has it. He repainted it and still has it. So, and I have an old German motorcycle that is in my garage waiting to be restored at some point in the future. So
now that one I know about. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that. I love that panel. I think it's a cool looking sickle.
Uh-huh.
And I think, oh man, be nice to be driving that around. That'd be fun. So I know it resonates with me. I like that panel a lot. How about you?
Well, first of all, good choice. And I like the personal touch to it as well. But yeah, it's a cool panel. For me, I'm going to go with page five. I'm going to go with the first panel, which is over half page splash, maybe two thirds page splash of Cap doing the gymnastics.
Yeah.
Right. You know me, I'm a sucker for Cap doing acrobats and multiple images of Cap doing that and the same thing. And, you know, here he is doing gymnastics. He's doing weight training. He's doing, you know, holding himself up. Yeah. I don't know. I like that image.
Yeah. And it probably resonates with you too, because I mean, this is kind of like your workout, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you go to the gym. I know you mentioned that once or twice. And...
Oh yeah. I lift probably, 800 pounds like this. This is being displayed here. Yeah.
Inverted sit-ups and
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Gymnast horse. Yeah.
Actually, probably of the four things that are going on here, that's probably the only thing I could do is the inverted sit-ups.
Oh, good. All right. Well,
you know what I mean? Like, I don't think I could do any of the others. The horse or the holding up by the rings. Yeah,
right.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. He's just having a conversation. Right. He's got his arms extended laterally, right?
Uh-huh.
On the rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's just chatting Jarvis up. So,
yeah.
Good for him. How about t-shirt worthy, Rick? What do you want to have on a t-shirt?
Well, Bob, I'm going to have to go with the money shot.
Ooh, the money shot.
I really am going to go with the money shot. Now, I'm biased. It's the page I own. But it is page 15 and it is the third panel. It's the, I want to put Doc Ock getting KO'd by Cap's shield on my t-shirt.
Mm.
I think, because you have said before, you love having t-shirts with villains on it.
Yeah.
Here's Doc Ock getting knocked out by Cap's shield. I think that would be cool on a t-shirt.
That would be cool. All right.
How about you?
Well, it was tough. I originally was going to go with that great center panel on page six of Cap driving the motorcycle, because I always love images of Cap driving the motorcycle. But I decided I was going to go with that center panel from page two, which is, you know, when Cap departs out of that skylight. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting rendering of Cap, because it's sort of in the foreground of the page. So his shoulder kind of covers the upper right-hand panel and his shield crosses over into the lower left-hand panel. Like he's actually coming off the page. I think that looked kind of cool just to take that image of Cap and put it on a t-shirt.
Yeah, I agree.
He just looks happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
the only thing I would change about that is have John Beatty ink it. I think John. Hmm?
I thought you were going to say take the portfolio, the art portfolio off his back.
No, I mean, yeah, I guess, but
you know, yeah.
But okay. You know, that this is where this is the example of where you see, you know, a different inker makes mm-hmm. all the difference. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. What about your time capsule? What are you doing there?
I'm hesitant to do this because I don't want to steal something from you, Rick.
That's all right. You've done it many times.
Oh, well, then I'm going to jump right in. So it's that number one that we see on John Colson's T-shirt. And we saw that, I think it was on pages 19 and 20, but we also saw that number one in the window of Ray Colson's cycle shop back on page 7.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if you know the history of that number one.
Tell me, Bob.
All right. Well, I'm glad you asked. So, you know, that number one is a Harley Davidson logo, and it was uh-huh. introduced in 1969 following the victory of Mert Lawwill at the 1969 AMA, that's American Motorcyclists Association, Grand National Championship, where he clinched the championship at the Oklahoma City Half Mile for the Harley Davidson team. Uh-huh. And so that number one was created to celebrate that victory. A few years later, they added the stars across it and began to feature it in all kinds of apparel for Harley Davidson, but also it was featured on the dashboard of the 1971 FX Super Glide that was that came out of production in 1971. And so you see that logo all the time on T-shirts starting around 1971. So I think that's a, you know, seeing it on the T-shirts in the window is just it's just a great call out to a great American motorcycle, Harley Davidson.
All right. Yeah. Are you done?
No, which is what Tap would have driven in World War II. And clearly is what he was given here.
I love the fact, like, you know, when you do the minimal amount of research on this particular issue, and then you go off for 5 minutes about the one thing you did research on.
Oh, no, it's not the one thing. Ask me about the Huns. The Huns motorcycle gang was, in fact, a real motorcycle gang that was founded in Connecticut. So it was dominated one of, you know, not like the Hells Angels or the Bandidos.
Oh, my God. I didn't really mean it.
Or the Pagans, which were all really West Coast that eventually branched out into Canada and the Eastern United States. But the Huns were a motorcycle gang on the East Coast, which is likely why it was known by the, you know, the writers of this.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Huns first appeared in the Americas in the 1847s at the Palestinians in. All right, Cliff, thank you very much for the facts there.
You want to drill down into Soledad, the name Soledad, why perhaps he might have been
God.
Anyway, what's your time capsule, Rick?
My time capsule, I'm so glad you asked, Bob. I'm gonna stick to the comic actually when I give you the answer to this.
All right.
You know, I had a couple here because I wasn't sure if you were going to take one and I needed to pivot. So I'm going to go with page 5.
Page 5.
You know where I went with that favorite panel?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where Cap was doing the thing. I'm going to go the very next panel where Jarvis shows up with a letter.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Right? He shows up with a letter. And he says, I just got this in. Here's a letter from a pen pal. And that's going in my time capsule. I think that's kind of just shows, you know, this is all pre-cell phone, pre-email, pre-any internet. You know, if you wanted to reach somebody, what'd you do? Well, you picked up the phone or you mailed them a letter.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
What's your time capsule, Bob?
It was the number one on the T-shirt, Rick. But do I get to go again?
Yeah, you have to pick something else.
Well, then I will go with the test pattern sequence on the television.
That was my backup.
Yeah, because you know they stopped doing those in their 1990s, and because most television stations now transmit 24 hours a day and don't put those test pattern cards on anymore in the wee hours.
So what are we talking about, listeners? Well, so during the epilogue, there was, when we see essentially the dad, right? His name,
Ray.
Ray Coulson, where he's kind of fell asleep at the table. And then his son, John, walks in at 3 a.m. I failed to mention there was a TV at the table, and it did have what Bob pointed out as the old test pattern. You remember those? You were at the end. Well, first of all, what happened right before that came on, Bob? Do you remember that?
Yeah, the national anthem, right?
The national anthem.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the national anthem would come on, and then it would turn to the test pattern and we'd go, doo!
Yep. And it'd be that way until the programming started again in the morning.
Exactly. So, that was my backup in case.
In case you
I don't know. I forgot I went first this time. I didn't need a backup. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good job.
All right. That was fun. That was fun. Yeah.
Thanks for picking out that episode, Bob.
Yeah. All right.
Now, I picked out the next episode.
Yes.
And I picked it out because I trust that our listeners are very smart and very intuitive, and wow, they pick up on things.
Yeah.
Unlike you, Bob.
Okay.
That you're going, they know that the first Wednesday of every month, uh-huh, what do we do, Bob?
We have a guest.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody knows that, right? First Wednesday of every month, we have a guest. Now, what do we like to do leading up to that guest? We like to do an issue featuring that guest, right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I think people have picked up on that. Do you think people have picked up on that? I think they did.
Probably.
Right?
At this point, yeah.
So, for example, episode 73, we had Al Milgram on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on episode 72, we did an Al Milgram issue 260.
Yeah.
You know? And then, you know, we had Mark Waid on. Well, mm-hmm, right before that, we had Mark Waid's story, the Sentinel of Liberty. We had Alana Smith on, editor, mm-hmm, right. Before that, we had Cap Zero on, an issue that she... So, example, right?
Right, yeah.
So, I'm going to tell everybody, next episode, 138, we are going to be covering... Are you ready for this, Bob?
I am ready. I'm on pins and needles.
Captain America number one by Taco Bell.
Oh my goodness. Are we going to take a run for the border, Rick?
Either that or run for the bathroom. I'm not sure.
Well, that sounds like an exciting and potentially hazardous undertaking, but this is unusual. This is off the beaten path.
Yes, there was. So Taco Bell apparently did back in 2009, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, oh my goodness, this is 14 years ago.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
That's older than your son.
Yeah. Strange fact, though, a Taco Bell taco would still be edible today.
Or at least the hot sauce packets that we have.
Packets, right?
From 14 years ago, the hot sauce packets we still probably have.
It's shelf stable. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Taco Bell Captain America number one. So do you have this issue?
I do, Rick. I bought the issue because I went out and I purchased a page of original art from the penciler for that issue.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to have a copy of the comic to go with it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And but back in 2009, if you were at Taco Bell, you could have gotten this comic as part of your meal.
Right. Yeah.
That's and right. It was Captain America number one. And it would actually, and here's the thing, they kind of went cheap here, right? They actually took the variant cover to Captain America 25, you know, volume five, number 25, the death issue, right? Where Edward Baker, Steve Eberting, Ed McGuinness did a variant cover for Captain America 25. It was a 50-50 cover, really. And so Taco Bell decided, whatever, Marvel decided that that was going to be the cover to this, as if it had never been seen before, which is complete BS, right?
Right.
So the Taco Bell Captain America number one has the Ed McGuinness cover of Cap running, you know, the red background. And there, you know, it's a two-part story.
Yeah, it's a fun little story. It's got, you know, it's got obviously Cap in it. It's got Sharon, it's got Nick Fury, and it involves Hydra. So, you know, it's a fun little pickup. If you hadn't heard about it before, then you might want to tune in and hear a little bit about it, because I think it's going to be the next big thing, Rick.
Okay. next big thing stuck in your colon. So yeah, there were actually two parts to the story. So there was On the Road with the Wrecker is the first part story. And then there was a second part story, which is Mini Marvels, which by Chris, I'm going to say pronounce his name is Giriasso. Giriasso. It's Giarusso. So Giriasso. Anyway, he was the writer. He was the penciler. He was the inker. He was the colorist. He was the letterer. Anyway, that's the second story, the Mini Marvels. But the first story, is something we're going to cover next episode. So if you, as a Captain America comic book fan, you're like, well, wait a minute, I don't own that in my collection. Well, here's your chance. We're going to cover it for you. Right. Yeah. You don't have to go out and spend $25 on it. Cause it is, I went on eBay, Bob. It's $25 to get this comic. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. It's that surprises me. I picked up a couple copies, I don't know, a couple of years ago when I got this original art page, and they weren't, you know, anywhere near that back then. But I don't know why they would have gone up in value. There's no conceivable reason for that.
Well, it's all supply and demand, Bob. That's how our system works.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm thinking the supply is low.
You mean because I bought those two?
Yeah, exactly. So there's only like five left.
Right. Yeah.
and apparently there's six people who want it.
Yeah.
So
there's a run.
There is
one
a run.
Or the other. Yeah.
When it comes to Taco Bell, there's a run.
Yeah.
We're going to cover that now. Now, the first story that we're going to cover, it's written by Joe Caramanga. Now, you've heard that name before.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because Joe Caramanga has typically been a letterer.
Right.
Well, here he is. He's not only the letterer for this story, he's the writer.
Yeah.
But we're not going to have, but we're not going to have him on the show.
No.
But the penciler and inker is Scott Koblish. I'm going to say Koblish, could be Koblish. I'm not sure. We'll figure it out next episode when we have Scott on the show. Scott, who not only was the penciler and inker for this particular Taco Bell special, he was also the inker for Ron Garney during volume one at the very end, when Mark Waid and Ron Garney were doing the very end of the story of, or very end of the volume of Captain America. Scott was the inker for Ron Garney. He also was the inker prior to that. He did one issue for 439 for I guess it was Hoover, right? Dave Hoover. And then in volume three, he also inked some issues there too. So he's got some Captain America experience, and that's why we're going to have him on the show. Yeah, he also did the American Dream miniseries, the five issue miniseries.
Yeah.
If you're a Fantastic Four fan, Bob, he's got a cover coming out, and this is really cool. For Fantastic Four 700, he's doing one of the covers of issue 700 that has, are you ready for this, 700 characters on the cover.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's coming out around the same time that this our interview with him is it's coming out soon. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So Fantastic Four 700, Scott Koblish is doing this amazing cover. So, we need to talk to him about that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you get 700 characters on a comic book cover? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah. Excellent. So anyway, come back next episode. We are going to cover Captain America number one, Taco Bell version.
Boom.
And then the next episode after that, we'll have Scott Koblish on the show. So anyway, there you go. There's the next two episodes after this.
All right. It looks like we got a plan, Stan.
We do have a plan. In fact, it's kind of crazy. All right, Bob. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I've had a lot of fun wrapping cap with you.
I have too. I can't wait for next week's Taco Bell experience.
We'll have to break out some of those packets.
I know, right? Yeah, right? Celebrate. Yeah, yeah. I feel like we should have a festive drink to go along with our sauce packets.
I don't know. What do you what do you get from a Taco Bell? Do you have a Diet Pepsi or something? I don't know.
Pepto Bismol.
Yeah, that too. All right, he's Bob Lucius. I'm Rick Verbanis. You have been listening to another episode of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast.